You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Oh, that was coming.
I don't know.
Are you serious?
No, I don't know. Is that like...
Castaway.
It's been a while since I bothered rewatching Castaway.
I saw it that one time, Christmas 2000, and that was enough for me.
But it would be a lot funnier if that volleyball was replaced with Woody Harrelson's character from the movie Wilson.
Somebody should CG that and make that a thing.
If nothing else,
that is a mashup that will happen.
I will say, I never thought I would say this 10 years ago, but I will quite frankly watch anything with Woody Harrelson.
Me too.
Like, I'm just like, you just like him. He couldn't turn it, and it's possible he's the world's biggest prick. I don't know. I don't care. It's just, he's got that Woody Harrelson-ishness him that you're like, I just like watching that guy.
You always wanted to be Woody from Cheers. You wanted to serve you a drink, and
apparently he stopped smoking so much pot, or at least, that's what he said, like, a couple years back, I stopped smoking pot. And since then, he's really been turning out some great stuff.
Or opening up oxygen bars. You remember that? He opened up oxygen bar
weird
in L.A.
thing in L.A. where everyone thought that
but
was
then he
be
kinda,
a
he did True Detective, and since then, everything's been...
I mean, he certainly had like, been heading the right way with pieces here and there.
Even going back to like White Men Can't Jump. I mean, he's
That's
always been an interesting
back.
Guy. Yeah.
Some of our listeners weren't even alive.
Yes.
Oh God, thank you for that.
They're actually talking about doing a remake now. That's how long ago that film came out. But I will say about this new film Wilson, which is the latest adaptation of a Daniel Clowes novel, the best known being, of course, Ghost World. Mm-hmm. I don't think this film would have worked without Woody Harrelson.
No, not at all.
I mean, maybe another equally that type of quirky, charismatic.
I don't know.
Actor,
yeah, it's a short list of people that could inhabit this role.
But this movie depends on his performance in it, and he is a typically Daniel Clowes type character. He's like an optimistic misanthrope. You know, he wants to believe there's good people out there somewhere. Yeah, he's just consistently disappointed to a point where you're like, okay, maybe you're not, maybe your standards are a little too high for what you expect from people.
Well, and he's kind of a prick, you know. There's no, it's like
he tries
to
connect.
On one hand, he does says, oh well, I'm an optimist, but he has impossibly high standards for other people, which is pretty rich considering he hasn't done shit with his life.
Well, he's like, people suck everywhere, and yet no matter where he goes, he is with no acknowledgement of social cues that exist, trying desperately to connect with anyone who's there.
He's very
no filter.
Yeah, he's very Asperger's.
Yeah,
Aspergery.
Yeah, he's Woody Harrelson aged and living living with by himself in a house where you're still like, how do you pay for things? Because near as we can tell, he doesn't have a job.
I just told myself he must be collecting on some sort of disability.
Something.
He must have fallen on
it
some.
It never becomes
like,
clear, but the movie basically starts with his best friend and his wife saying, his only friend going, we're moving away, like out of state, far away, and he's kind of furious because that's his only connection,
like support
to humanity at all.
Yeah.
And he's kind of left adrift, going, "Well, what am I going to do?" He's wandering around, sitting next to people on a train when it's the only other seat. You know,
he has no sense of personal space, and he has this thing where he's just like, "Well, people aren't social anymore; they're on their computers." Of course, they're on their computers being social, but he doesn't know anything about that.
Understand.
And so, whenever he sees somebody like, sitting alone, even in a bathroom urinal, he's like, he's standing right next to us. Let me give you some reflections on my reflections on life. And the other person is like, you need to get the fuck away from me now.
He's so desperate to reconnect. He has the one thing he can think of, other than his dog, which he has a strong connection with.
Yeah.
The one thing he can think of is when he finds out that his ex-wife, there's a possibility from 17 years beforehand, or ran out on him, that she might be able to, he might be able to connect with her. And sure enough, finds that she's moved back to town, and he connects with her, played by Laura Dern.
Yes.
And they do have sort of like a weird sort of two very fucked up people meet cute. Like hit it off again in a way that you're sure will be temporary, but at the time you're like, okay, well this is good for both of them, I guess. You can tell she's just as fucked up as he was, reportedly was previously previously had been a prostitute, strung out on drugs.
Yeah.
And she reveals to him that although he had thought that she had had an abortion when she left him for she was pregnant with his child, she did not, in fact, have the abortion, but had had the baby and given it up for adoption, which to Wilson is like the greatest news he's ever heard. Yeah. He's like, I have someone that has to connect.
He's linked to somebody now.
He's definitely, you know, this whole thing, boil it down to what it is. It's a guy having a very serious midlife crisis because he's, you know, 45, 48, you know, maybe a little older than that. And he's realized like he has no connection. His father dies at the very beginning of the movie. His best friend leaves his best friend who, you know, he's basically kind of been counting on to be his safety net is he and his wife have left town. He's got no one. And, you know, so he kind of starts going through the list of, well, who do I have connections with? Gets back with wife. And the fact that, yes, he's got this is an unbeatable biological connection that nobody can take away, you know.
But you're stuck with me.
She gave this kid up for adoption. She's a teenager, and she's got her own life with, you know, comfortably well-off parents that have been raising her for the last 7 years.
Distance, but comfortably well-off parents. And she's, you know, I mean, she's a large girl. And he and Lardern starts basically stalking her just with that. Neither one of them really being aware that this just isn't something you do.
I think she knows that you don't do it, but I don't know why she agrees to go with him anyways.
I think because like she is such a like herself.
I think the character kind of shows that she's not really good with the decision making process at all. She can be a little impetuous,
and to some degree, she's also drawn to Woody Harrelson's character, who is like unlike anyone else she's ever met.
I kind of pictured them getting together when she was like strung out and like had nothing going for her. Now that she seems like, for all intents and purposes, well put together, it's like, why are you still giving him the time of day?
Well, she literally spells it out. He's the one guy that she's never been able to frighten away. He, like, no matter what shenanigans she put him through, he was always there. And there is something attractive about a person like that if you've got a codependent bone in your body.
Mm. Yeah, that's very true.
See, you mutter like that, but that's because you're not a codependent person.
No, I'm not.
You're well adjusted.
Then shut up.
We hate you for being so well adjusted.
You
that'll be my flaw.
He's going to go home after this and call his mom, and he's going to be like, Mom, I just really want to help these two guys, and I'm not sure how to reach out to them. Like, God damn it, stop that shit.
I mean, I'm not going to do that.
If they only made movies about well-adjusted people, this movie would not be made.
Well, they don't make those movies because they suck.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not a very exciting
pretty much,
movie.
Yeah.
That's just Frank's life. And he's like, get that camera out of my face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just leave me alone.
He's like, I got my shit together. Why are you filming me? I'm not interesting in that way.
No.
You should kill someone just to see what it feels like, Frank.
I've actually thought about that. I probably shouldn't say it on this podcast.
Anyway, this is... It's weird that, like, at first this feels a lot more like something like Ghost World, you know, to me, where you're kind of following this guy and his philosophy of life and, you know, it just kind of events that are happening to him and how he deals with them. But as it goes along and gets more plot-oriented, I felt like the director here, Craig Johnson, who is not as accomplished a director as Terry Zwigoff, who did Ghost World so well, kind of gets lost in... like Hollywood convention along the way.
Yeah, he tries to hit all those marks, and it's just such a jarring, jarring.
It's an art house movie that seems to really want to be like a run of the mill comedy, and you know, really, if you treat Woody Harrelson's character, if you treat Wilson as this comic, you know, fulcrum, then it the movie kind of falls apart and becomes kind of weirdly uncomfortable, which is what happened to me. There was a lot of this stuff that, you know, and I know there is a form of humor that's derived from watching the discomfort or watching people do uncomfortable stuff and not being aware that they're being that uncomfortable, making people uncomfortable. That shit makes me really uncomfortable. So I don't find it amusing.
It's you're right, though. It does feel like that indie film that wants to be a film that everybody goes to see and likes and is proud that they like it, even though it's an indie film like Little Miss Sunshine or something.
Yeah, that's kind of
it's odd because one of the producers of this is Alexander Payne, who makes movies like that, but makes them very well.
Yeah.
He makes, you know,
absolutely.
Sideways, and,
Election.
You know, Election. Oh. going on before. I think he would have done an incredible job with this, and I think made me like it a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I guess
I think it was just the director. It was just the wrong choice. And
the way it sometimes it just devolves into slapstick for no reason at all, or like when you really get into the beginning of the third act, where it's kind of where you have to have that point where it's like, okay, he's finally learned something. The movie chooses to just skip entirely past the entire sequence where he learns something and how it happened. Mm-hmm. We just know the surroundings in which it happened and just go, okay, well, he's better now. You're like, what? I felt like that would have been the most interesting part of this entire film. And the movie's just like, yeah, we're just not even going to worry about it.
I think the whole movie would work pretty well as just like one long road trip.
Yeah.
Instead of him, you know, having to reconnect with Pippi for so long, you know, them having to go visit her sister for as long as they did. The whole prison sequence, I mean, it just jumped so far. I mean, so much.
And there's characters you want to see more of that the movie doesn't give you that, like Margot Martindale has a brief role in here. It's wonderful and everything.
And every single person who for the most part, who plays a minor role in this is a great fight. Like Marilyn Rice Cub, who plays the wife of his best friend, who's played by Brett Gelman, who is also a very funny gentleman. Those two are great. They're in like literally like a minute
His childhood friend was hilarious.
His childhood friend was hilarious. David Warshawski,
the one person more fucked up than he was in the movie.
The female cast. Period. Not even supporting cast. I mean, Laura Dern, Judy Greer, Cheryl Hines, Marilyn Ryska, Margot Martindale. I mean, you know, come on, man. Those people are all like, top of their game. Good. And yeah, it's like, with the exception of Laura Dern, a lot of them don't really have much to do in here.
Yeah, that's very true. Even Laura Dern gets kind of shuttled out of the film when they decide that they don't need her anymore. And I just kind of went, well, I was loving the way that dynamic was building between them, and then the movie just kind of abandons it like it was never important to the plot at all. Yeah. We're like, well, this is a character piece. Seems like they're... That dynamic that we've been following is really kind of essential. Like
closure and healing was on its way, and then, it's gone.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was very mixed about this. I think Woody Harrelson definitely has all the charisma that he ever does. It's totally worth watching this movie for him. He's very funny in it, to be sure. But the joke doesn't last through the entire 101-minute running time. There's a point where you're just kind of like, okay, I'm just kind of exhausted with what this plot is just jumping all over the place, and I just kind of want this to wrap up. I liked it, but didn't love it. It could have been so much better in the hands of a better director, I think, and with another script polish. I'm going to give this 6 out of 10 incredibly awkward bathroom conversations.
You know, I gotta agree with everything that's been said here, and I think that we're all pretty much on the same page. This movie is just so jarring in tone. I mean, I remember that one instance where Woody Harrelson and the actress plays his daughter. What's her name?
Isabella Amara.
Isabella Amara. They're having this really, like, actually genuine, tender moment by the lake when they're actually connecting his mother and daughter, or father and daughter, and it's intercut between a catfight between Cheryl Hines and Laura Dern repeatedly. And I thought, well, God, this, you know, whoever's putting this movie together has no idea what they're doing. It's funny. I think, you know, Bo said Alexander Payne would have been a good choice to direct this. Derek Cianfrance turned this movie down to do Light Between Oceans, which I thought was a good film. But
it was okay.
Yeah, but I think, you know, he could have done so good with this as well. I think there's so many other directors that could have handled this and handled the material, source material, better.
Yeah, I mean, this is from the director who made very overrated The Skeleton Twins.
Yeah, the Twins. I like The Skeleton Twins.
It's good. It's not much more than good.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little bit more than good, but I really like Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader.
Oh, their chemistry is great.
They're why that movie goes beyond.
But then it's just like this case. It's okay. Woody Harrelson is the only reason this movie succeeds on any level that it does. His delivery is still pitch perfect. And I am attracted to no-filter sort of characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the Helmers just didn't know what to do with him or the movie itself. So for that reason, I got to give it 5 out of 10 bagel-shaped coffee cups, which I do not approve of, because I do not approve of any beverage holder that actually takes away how much beverage you can have in it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Bo?
This movie is a lot like Wilson himself. It may have an interesting thing or two to say, but it's so uncomfortable that by the time it finally gets around to saying it, you just want it to get the fuck away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This definitely would have been better served by a director who could figure out a way that they could still have that character, but make it somehow relatable, whether or not it's you know, for him, you know, figuring something out about his life, or, you know, having some kind of affect on the world. You don't get any of that here. You don't really get anything that you know serves the you know, it's all just story. It's all over this place, as Chris kind of said. And by the time you get to the end, you don't feel like really that you've gone any place particularly special. I'm giving this performance of Woody Harrelson offers a little bit, but I certainly wouldn't go seek this movie out in the theaters. If it rolls around on your Netflix, maybe put it on the queue and have a look. But
watch it while you're doing your taxes.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah.
Exactly. I can't give it more than 5 out of 10 uncomfortable facial tattoos.
Yeah, I used to live with a guy. One of those things where my roommate, we needed a new roommate. He's like, I got a friend. He's available immediately. We'll get him. And he was fucking Wilson. He was like 25 years older than us. We're like, why do you want to live with 2 20-something-year-old guys? His walls were nothing but books. His floor was constantly covered with trash. He was just like, he'd go like, hey, how you doing? And you go, well, I'm, and he's like, ugh. Nice. You're like, wow.
I think that person's living with a friend of mine right now.
People like Wilson really exist.
Oh, yeah, no, you can't live with people the same age because they won't put up with that.